News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. Dr. Bill promising us a very good forecast for today, so enjoy and get on out there. Meanwhile, we've got some events that are on the way later on this week, including one that is being hosted by Light of the Village.
Yeah, and on with us once again, we always appreciate when we get to talk to this man, wonderful man, John Eads with Light of the Village. And hey, John, good morning. Let's we'll talk about this event, but we got some other stuff to ask you here first.
Oh, good morning, guys. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah,
love to talk to y'all.
Just for the audience's sake, a lot of people know what Light of the Village is, but there may be some people who don't. So just in a minute's time or so, let everyone know what it's all about.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. It all started 2,000 years ago, basically, when Christ said, go and make disciples of all nations. And so that's when it started. As far as it here locally, my wife and I worked at the infirmary and enjoyed that time. My wife was a school teacher. We did some prison ministry for many years. And then in 2001, 2002, we felt the calling to take a house inside a neighborhood that had issues. And Alabama Village was the perfect place for that. Got a crack house, actually, that was at 333 Baldwin Drive. And basically, over the years, turned it from that kind of house into God's house. And we had no idea where it would go back in 2002. But today, it's a full-service ministry. You know, 5 days a week, we serve all ages, and it's just been an amazing journey all the way around. A couple of things about it. Again, everything we do is free for the children that come, for the after-school programs and the summer camps. The teenage program has blossomed. It actually, interestingly enough, Dan, it started after a double homicide took place in January of 2016,
Remember
where
that.
Two of our individuals killed each other, actually, across the street from the ministry. And what blossomed from that, after we did the candlelight vigil inside, we usually do it outside, but we did it inside because it was raining, but we saw so many teenagers come, and then the next week they came again. So Wednesday night became our teen night. And today, we serve a close to anywhere between 40 and 50 teenagers from 12 different middle schools and high schools. And that's, I mean, who would have ever thought that? I would not have ever thought that.
Yeah.
God always surprises us, you know.
John, it's amazing because, so on any given Wednesday, people are saying, you know, things are crazy out there. It's the young people with the guns and on and on and on. And these kids volunteer to come to a teen night at the ministry and do the exact opposite.
Yeah, no, it's so surprising, and it's just a blessing all the way around to be located in the middle of this area, you know, that is plagued by different things, you know, violence, poverty, despair, basically, and to see the faith, love, and hope just blossom through. And you're exactly right. The kids want to come, and it's up to us, you know, to make sure we provide that, loving atmosphere, a disciplined atmosphere as well. But just to make sure they feel that ability to be a kid, you know what I mean? Even if it's just for a couple of hours. It's wild. And that's for the teenagers and for the young kids, too, even the elementary school age children. Same thing, you know. What so many of them don't have is that ability sometimes just to be a child.
Right.
And so we try to provide that service.
We're speaking with John Eads with Light of the Village in Pritchard. John, I guess this is a two-part question. What's the average day like, both for you and for a kid who comes in to utilize your services there? Let's just say like an average school day when they come back from school.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting, too, over the last year, we had a former school teacher, Kristen Jordan, voluntarily resigned her position as a high school math teacher because she felt the calling to really develop an intensive tutoring program, both in schools and after school. And so to go back to your question, we have both Kristen and now, like, my wife, Elizabeth Davis, and some other folks that work with us, go into the schools, So right now, Whitley Elementary and Biger High School, which is in our service area, work with kids there. And then for the after-school component, these kids come and they receive some after-school tutoring for like 20 or 30 minutes, not just with our folks, but with some other volunteers that have come forward. And so what's kind of neat about that is they really want to sit there and learn how to read. We're focusing on reading because we know that's a big issue. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do with these kids. And what I've seen, again, 20 years we've been doing this, you don't have to pull their teeth. You know what I mean? They want to come and sit with a volunteer and read for 20 minutes. And that's just so cool. So going back to your question. So our day starts on a regular school day. First off, our folks going into the schools on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Alabama Village, and on Mondays around the Figure Center in Tolmanville, what we do is we pick the kids up in the van, bring them to the center, and then we start the rotations. We have like 20-minute rotations where they have, you know, they have fun, they play a little game, they have a snack, they have a Bible study, and then we take them home. And so that's what our days normally look like for that mm-hmm. element of kids, that age. Now, again, we designed this ministry so no one ages out of it. In other words, so once that elementary school kid turns to middle school, high school, we have our high school programs primarily on Wednesdays and Sundays. And then even the adults, Dan, on Thursdays, we have a community lunch where mm-hmm. people are just adults now because kids are supposedly in school. So the adults come, they can get a meal. We have the after-school component in the afternoon. And then they have ladies' night, which is a brand new kind of blossom ministry that's just kind of popped up over these past few years, where my wife teaches the ladies and we provide childcare for that. But that's increasing to 25 ladies who show up, and it's just really cool. So our days are, that's what our schedule looks like. As you know, due to the neighborhood, you never know what's going to happen. It's always, you know, you always got to be ready for whatever, but that's okay because we want people to feel welcome to come.
Now, also, being on the board, I happen to know, and people from the outside looking in will say, wow, this is some heavy lifting right here, day in, day out, and financially, how could they possibly sustain themselves? And the fact is, you know, that you were a former CFO?
That was CEO of the infirmary.
Yeah, North Baldwin, CEO. So you've got good business training, and we're never begging for money. We're always in the black, and it's run like a business. At the same time, it's run really to bring the kids and the adults around to the belief in Christ and to the mission for them to, be believers, become believers. And at the same time, you offer all kinds of assistance to them personally, educationally. It's hard to believe. When I tell people about it, they can hardly believe it. I think one way you could learn more about it is the program, the event coming up on Thursday, which we'll get to. John, what is the situation right now with the water in Pritchard in Alabama Village, most specifically, and have people now been forced to move out?
Sure. That came up about a year ago, as you and probably a lot of the listeners know. The idea, almost exactly a year ago, we were told that we had 90 days before the water would be turned off completely. Obviously, that's not happened. A receiver was appointed by the courts, and he has come in. And where we are today is that receiver, who has a ton of experience with dealing with failing water systems from Flint, Michigan, St. Louis, all over, he says that he is going to give his report for options moving forward. It's due in July to be given to the court and the Synovius Bank, who basically are the investors that are involved, and doing that. One thing we have heard with the regards of turning off the water, you know, the idea of it being, you know, eminent domain being put on the Alabama Village community. The last thing we heard was at a open meeting between the water board, the receiver, and the city council members of Pritchard, is that they have determined that legally there is no way they could deploy that option. And so that takes them back to other options they have to do within the Alabama Village community. Now, that may still be brought up again, but at this point, it appears that has been put on hold because legally you just can't shut down a community. Mm. One thing that people don't know, and we met with the receiver. He was a very nice man. He came to the ministry, and we spoke. There are people who live there. I mean, I'm talking that have lived there their whole generations. We think of Alabama Village as just this blighted area with just, you know, other issues, which in some of that is true. However, there are at least 38 to 40 water meters, if we use that term, of homes that, of people who actually do live there. And we're talking young families. And it's not just old retired folks. And again, you just can't go in there and shut off their water just because of mismanagement for the last many, many years.
Is there optimism that with this new receivership in place that maybe things will get turned around at the water board, thereby, you know, helping out a lot, everyone who has to get their water from that service?
I think it's, I don't know if I would call it optimism. I think just curiosity at this point. I think, again, this is a community that deals a lot with issues and, you know, that aren't so good. And so it's a very persistent, you know, community that deals with a lot of issues. And so I think no one's really optimistic. I think we're all just waiting to see what happens next, if that makes sense. But again, the idea that we're going to shut the water off in 90 days, you have to move, that is, at this point, seems to be taken off the table. But that is what was told to us again about a year ago.
John, what I love about Night in the Light, the event that's coming up on Thursday, is I love when people, when I invite people who have heard of Light of the Village maybe, or but know so little about it, that's when you can really get a complete picture. Because what it is a presentation of, here we are, here are some of the kids, you meet some of the children, you meet some of the adults, and everything is kind of spelled out by you. Brilliantly, by the way. You do such a great job on annually kind of, it's a report, but it's a report that's more than just numbers. There's a lot of facts involved. Some of them are very somber, but at the same time, you see the resilience in Light of the Village itself and some of the kids and the people.
Yeah, exactly. And I, of course, you're being a board member, you remember the one thing we didn't want this dinner to become was just this fundraising event. There's nothing wrong with those, of course, but what we want this to be is a celebration. Mm-hmm. In other words, we want to let the people who have supported us over the years, and again, as you know, with our budget, you know, 80% comes from individuals.
Donations, so yeah.
We do not take government money. We get some foundational helps and some churches that have supported us, but we want everyone to feel welcome to come, hear what's been going on, and not just over the years, but what's going on in the future, what our plans are, or more importantly, what God's plans are, because it's an amazing story, even to us that have been there for so many years.
Yeah,
and so we want people to, you know, just to come, and you know this as well, we spend extra money to have a wonderful event. In other words, we have it catered by Chef Rob. We really want it to be a fun atmosphere. You do meet some of the kids. We have our teenagers, we call them our ambassadors, serving the people, just so they can, people who may not ever want to go to Alabama Village, and I totally get that. Now, of course, we offer tours all the time. We invite people to come and see whenever they would like to. We'd love people to come and see the kids and see the staff and see the team just in action. But for those who don't want to, that's cool. You know, come to this little dinner that we have tomorrow night at the grounds at 6. And the other thing we promise to do is have everybody out by 8:30. And that's up to me, as you know, to give the presentation as quickly as possible. We don't want to take up their entire evening, but at the same time, we want it to be worthwhile event where we can really celebrate, again, not what we're doing, but obviously what God is doing.
Yeah, it's very impactful evening that kind of basically highlights the impacts of Light of the Village itself. And of course, tickets are available right now, Dalton.
Yeah, and I'm looking, you got a couple places you can find out more about this event and also get tickets. Lightofthevillage.org, your place to visit for that, but also your Facebook page with all kinds of information. And that's also Light of the Village. Is that right, John?
Absolutely right. Yes, sir, 100%.
John,
and we still have some availability, so if anybody wants to come, feel free to. We would love to have you.
The price on the tickets, John?
$50 mm-hmm. for one seat. And then if you want to get a table, you can just multiply that times 8. And so it's 400.
Yes, look forward to it tomorrow, John. Should be a great time out at the grounds. Appreciate your time. Thank you for catching up with us and with me. And we'll see you in a little more than 24 hours, man.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right. John Eads with Light of the Village. Night in the Light tomorrow night at the grounds. Again, check out lightofthevillage.org or find them at facebook.com/lightofthevillage.
821, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. That text line, of course, 251-343-0106. If you want to let us know what's going on.
By the way, quick traffic update. And Kane may have this in his next traffic, but thank you, Leanna. Accident, looks like in Saraland, Highway 45 and Calioka Road. So 45 and Calioka Road, an accident. Be aware if you're traveling in that area.
All right. You always want to be very careful as you drive in school zones.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of all know where those school zones are. Old Shell Road is a mess, by the way.
After the other.
Yeah, you got the battle UMS Wright and St. Paul's, and those schools are about, and then you got E.R. Dixon right off of Old Shell Road. So anyway, you got to be careful. But the numbers that Andrea Ramey uncovered, it almost doesn't sound correct, but I guess it is correct.
Yeah.
Repeat those if you would.
Yeah, so this Andrea Ramey, these stats she got came after, of course, Monday morning in Alberta. He had an 8-year-old girl, a student of Alberta Elementary, and she was waiting for the school bus. I think the school bus was already there, had its stop sign all the way out, and an SUV drove up, hit this 8-year-old girl. She suffered some serious, serious injuries, broken bones, multiple broken bones, a concussion, and it was a hit and run. So that black SUV drove off to work. They ended up arresting the suspected driver, 33-year-old Catherine Roluck of Alberta. Now, good news, after the girl, 8-year-old, again, was life-flighted to Sacred Heart in Pensacola, her mother jumped on the Alberta Police Department Facebook page and said her daughter will recover. And she thanked the community for its support. But those stats, absolutely, well, I think sickening. Ramey with 15, NBC 15, Andrea Ramey. She talked with the Baldwin County Public Schools Transportation Coordinator, Sam Ellis. And I guess, and let me know if this is how it works, some of you that work in the school system, or I know we have some listeners who work on some of these bus routes. Is it one day a year, one school day a year, where you go out and survey and see how many people are breaking laws as they pass these stopped buses and stopped school zones? Anyway, she spoke with Sam Ellis with Baldwin County, said last year they counted 73 incidents of illegal passing in one day alone. So that's with Baldwin County Public Schools, 73 in one day. You look at Mobile County, and bus drivers reportedly documented 227 instances of people illegally passing school buses on one day, their one survey day last year, 227. They also said some people in the same day, same vehicle,
twice,
will drive by these school buses while they're stopped multiple times.
That's unbelievable. You got to be aware. Obviously, it can sneak up on you in terms of you're driving along, you're thinking about a number of things, and you're not familiar with the area maybe, and suddenly maybe it could be in a rural area of the county, and now the school bus stopped, and it might, you know,
slow your day down a little bit.
Well, I think the first thing is it could, you know, surprise you, like, oh, wow, I'm in a school zone right here. They're dropping off kids, you know? But you got to be aware. I mean, that number, that's amazing we don't have more terrible accidents on these roads.
So Joshua said, I want the buses to stop picking the kids up in the dark. It's so dangerous. Wait 20 minutes until the sun comes out. Now, I could see how that could be a problem. That's actually the main argument that those people have that don't want daylight saving time year-round.
Yeah.
Because in the morning, it's still dark. You got these school buses.
Yeah.
But yeah, that number, way too high. We got to bring that down.
Incredible. 8:30 with Dan and Dalton. Good morning to you.
FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for listening to Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive, and we talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine. Tell us what's going on at McConnell. What kind of great deals do you have here for March?
Man, we got plenty of deals. We want $8,000 off. They're good-looking Sierras. We got them all over the place. Just check them out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Got a, like I said, a great selection of Sierras. Got, like I said, a few 23s left. It's got that $8,000 off, so you check those out. Got a great selection of used cars. And you're looking to sell your car, give us a call, 251-476-4141. We need cars. We're buying cars every day. We bought a few off the street yesterday, hopefully to buy a few today. And like I said, the inventory is changing, so check our website out. And if you need something, just give us a call.
Yeah, it's that easy. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you. Come see us.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive. They're on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and that website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:36 on your Wednesday morning.
And again, this hour, your chance a little bit later on to win a pair of tickets to see The Guess Who. They're going to be playing at the Sanger Theater on April 12th. That's a Friday night, so a good time to go see a show. We'll give away another pair of tickets later on in the show, and also you can buy those tickets at Ticketmaster.com or the Sanger Theater box office. So regarding the school bus passing, got a few texts on that, and the numbers we had there from Andrea Ramey. In one day alone last year, 73 incidents of illegal passing in Baldwin County, and in Mobile County, 227 instances of people illegally passing school buses. As one texter mentioned earlier, Joshua, he said, you know, there's a problem with buses picking up kids in the dark early in the morning. He said, it's so dangerous, just wait 20 minutes until the sun comes up. Well, and I don't know how all these routes work, but I imagine that the bus drivers aren't out there earlier than they want to be or need to be
yeah.
Right?
Right.
With these long routes, and there's so many drivers, but still so much area to cover. I think they've kind of got to be started then. I mean, we're not seeing light until, what, 7? So that gives them about an hour from 7 to 8 to get the kids to school. And like I said, that's the main reasoning. You won't hear many people argue against year-round daylight saving time. But remember, they were passing those stats around a couple weeks ago that they did go year-round once, and that was such a major issue nationwide, school buses picking up kids in the dark, that's why they apparently changed it back. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but it's a reason that a lot of folks give. Todd from Grand Bay said, if they don't want to stand in the dark for the school bus, change the time that the school takes in, not daylight savings time. So maybe get the kids up there at, 9. Does that sound fair? School starts at 9. That way the buses are running a little later. This texter said, not sure. Do you stop for a school bus if it's on a divided highway? I've seen some people that do and some that don't. Yeah, I guess I've never really been sure of that. I just looked it up. It says you don't have to stop if it's a divided highway as long as you're in the opposite lanes,
yeah.
Right? Going the opposite direction. Only one state where you do, and that's West Virginia.
Huh.
So in Alabama, if it's a divided highway, you're on the other side of the highway from the school bus, no need to stop.
And I was wondering if these are state laws rather than federal laws, and they are state by state, I guess.
It sounds like it, if West Virginia has that one law. Michael says, if you think the numbers passing stopped buses is high, go sit in the 15-mile-an-hour school zone on Spring Hill and Tut Hill and watch how many vehicles fly through doing 40-plus.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's right. It's St. Ignatius Catholic School.
I treat the school zones like I'm on pit road, or like I'm behind the pit car at a NASCAR race. Like, I will go the exact school limit, and I'm always ready to stop if the crossing guard gets out there. But as soon as I hit that second sign, it's
off
on.
You go.
I'm moving. Yeah, I'm moving.
By the way, right around the corner from where we are, it might be New Street. Anyway, it's right off the Beltline here between Airport and Cottage Hill to the south of us. That's one of the places where all the school buses are, I believe, or maybe.
I know there's a lot on Halls Mill.
Halls Mill, okay.
A bunch of school buses out on Halls Mill.
Yeah, there's one place in particular where it looks like there they are. It's like you've struck gold with all the school buses. That may be Metro buses.
The Wave buses?
Wave.
Yeah, they're right
Wave.
Down the street from us.
Yeah, okay.
All right. It's great getting stuck behind them in the morning. Jason says, imagine the numbers of unsafe actions committed by the school bus drivers. In my opinion, they're the most reckless people on the road. And that would be a problem if you've got, in addition to a reckless school bus driver, which I'd hope they're far and few between out there. If you've got people that are illegally passing too, then, you know, the victim is the kids, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The ones who are just trying to get on the bus safely and get to school and vice versa on their way back. This texter says, people need to understand what a divided highway is. I loved watching the police ops where they set up to ticket all the bus passers. That's Angry Patriot. Yeah, and I know that police force still running a little low, not as low as they were at one time, but they've got very, very busy days where they're going from call to call. We've heard the sheriff say that multiple times. Maybe every now and then, and I don't know how often they already do it, maybe do some of these school bus, you know, Project School Bus, or they can come up with some fancy operation name for it.
Yeah, those numbers just don't really make any sense. I know it's a big county. I get it. You know, Dauphin Island to Citronelle, you've kind of got about 60 miles in between all there. So you got all these schools and all these kids being transported and all these bus drivers. And on the text line, if you are a bus driver or if you have been a bus driver, lend us some of what you know from being a public school bus driver. What, you know, what some of the issues are that you deal with or have dealt with in the past, 251-343-0106. I'm sure we've got more than one or two of those drivers that are listening and wanting to give us a piece of their mind right now.
A couple more here. Lori says, you should see how many people run the stop signs around schools in the mornings, and that half of them are parents who just dropped their kids off.
Wow.
So they're trying to get the heck out of there as fast as they can, right, after dropping off the little the kids.
My job's done.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Chris says, I work for the, street department school. Bus drivers have no idea how to make a turn. They're the ones who tear up the neighborhood roads on the corners at a four-way stop. We're constantly having to come back and redo the road with asphalt patch.
Wow.
Again, there's hundreds of bus drivers out there. I'm sure some of those are probably incredible drivers. But, yeah, just like any profession, you know, you're going to get some people who maybe aren't the best at what they do.
Yeah, you got some bad eggs out there. And I guess we had a situation coming out of COVID, right, in Baldwin County, maybe in Mobile County, too. They needed bus drivers.
Oh, yeah. Very low on bus drivers.
Very low on bus drivers and needed them to some had to kind of double up and do two routes.
That's right. They had bus drivers running multiple routes.
Yep.
So even when we weren't in daylight saving time, they were probably having to get started so early that a lot of dark pickups there too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Early in the morning. So keep those texts coming, 251-343-0106. Trump, of course, in the news, like always. And I thought this was notable. We kind of talked about this a little last hour, but he did say this week that it's not looking like Vivek will be his pick for VP.
I never thought that was a good pick.
Good fit.
No.
He's officially rejected picking Ramaswamy. Of course, with Trump, is it ever official until he actually makes the selection? That's what he told the New York Post. Ramaswamy, of course, when he dropped out after the Iowa caucuses mid-January, he immediately endorsed Trump, and then he was on stage with him immediately, too.
Yeah, so was Jeff Sessions. But Ramaswamy, who I really like, obviously, but his core beliefs are so in line with Trump, his idea of the border and being an American citizen and almost further along than Trump's as far as being to the right. And that's not what he needs in his vice president. That could be somebody he certainly appoints to the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. So capable. And some of these fools we have now, like Mayorkas, I mean, how could you dig any lower than to appoint that guy? But for his vice presidential, that's purely, you have to satisfy politics.
Yeah. Yeah. And that maybe wouldn't draw in enough for the Trump presidential campaign, enough votes from the outside.
And I was so impressed with, and, you know, we go back and forth on her, but Tulsi Gabbard, I pulled up a couple of things where she was long form interviews, and she's tough as nails.
Mm-hmm.
And right now she is an independent.
An independent, yeah. But, you know, she has a lot of. She holds Democrat positions in a lot of things.
Yeah.
She might not talk about those as much when she's on Fox News or Tucker, but she was a Democrat, and there were reasons she was. But as far as, you know, looks and the ability to convey a message, she's pretty good, and she's popular on some of the populist things that people are voting for Trump and who voted for Vivek for.
Yep, I agree.
One of the positions here they floated, one of the cabinet positions for Ramaswamy was Homeland Security Secretary, which is interesting. I don't know if that's the best place. Would he be better with Commerce or, the FCC? Of course, you know, these different administrative positions, these different cabinet positions have their own importance, right? Like someone would much rather be the chief of staff than, well, anything else in the cabinet. But there's levels of importance, I would say, with these cabinet positions, and they're certainly jockeying for those behind the scenes.
I think Vivek, Homeland. I think it's perfect. And here's why I think it's perfect. His parents were from India, so he's first generation here in the United States. So many first-generation, second-generation citizens look at this country like it's a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, I mean, he reveres this nation. And he also reveres citizenship and how to acquire citizenship and how to get here and how to stay here and how to behave here. And a lot of his talks were about that problem that we're having right now.
Mm.
And he's very, I wouldn't say he's hard line on it. Dalton, I'd just say he's right on it. And he's got that's plenty of conversations he's had that talk about that talking point, not just the border, but immigration overall and what Americans should do. He's got some ideas that are further right than most. But, I think he feels like we might want to serve some time in the military, almost like Israel and some other nations like that. But he is so elated to be living in this country. You say, well, he's made millions of dollars. Well, he has, but he's done it on his own, playing by the rules inside a country that he is the first gen.
Yeah.
And so he looks at America like it is something that is very precious. I would love our Homeland Security Director to look at this nation as a precious place.
I think I know who you would pick. Yeah, you wrote the campaign speech for him right there, if that's what he wants. They also floated North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. I could see that being maybe Interior or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Elise Stefanik and former U.S. Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer. And then this is the one that got me. Former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is reportedly seen as a potential White House chief of staff.
Hmm.
It seems like it would be a good role for him. You know, he had trouble keeping his conference in line, and obviously that ended up being the end of him, not just as House Speaker, but as a congressman.
Yeah, I mean, he's done running.
Yeah, he folded up the table and headed home, folded up his chairs. What would you think of McCarthy as White House Chief of Staff? Now, I don't know if it's McCarthy's people who leaked his name out there, like, hey, I'd be a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Or if that's from the Trump people. Obviously, that means two separate things, depending on who it's coming from.
Sure.
McCarthy is White House Chief of Staff. That's interesting.
I'm going to talk to Jeff Poore. A lot of interesting things happening in Montgomery, Alabama. And we'll touch on some of those straight ahead on Mobile Mornings. From Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Mike Pompeo is coming to town. Now, is he coming to town to see you? Well, you can go see him. He's going to be at the University of Mobile Leadership Banquet. This is the 17th annual University of Mobile Leadership Banquet. They've brought in some incredible speakers over the years, so it's really kind of like the highlighted event of the year. It's a big fundraiser as well. It's going to be April 6th at the Convention Center downtown Mobile on the riverfront. Tickets available now at umobile.edu/banquet for the Christian University's main fundraising event of the year. And it's going to have a little entertainment, too, from the students and the faculty from the university's Alabama School of the Arts. The banquet begins with a VIP reception at 5:15 p.m. Ask about that. And the banquet starts at 6:30 p.m. It gets at the Arthur R. Outlaw Convention Center in downtown Mobile. Mike Pompeo, the featured speaker, of course. He's been the director of the CIA. He was Secretary of State as well. So this is a guy in the know, and you might want to hear what he's got to say. Again, check out the University of Mobile's Leadership Banquet. Tickets on sale now, and sponsorships, too. Available at umobile.edu/banquet or contact the Office of Advancement at 251-442-2325.
All right, coming up in about 10 minutes, we have the Jeff Poore Show, and it is a Wednesday, so we on Mobile Mornings get to check in with Jeff Poore before his show. How about that? Jeff, good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
So big name on the guest list today. Not that you don't have big names every day, but Senator Tuberville coming on with you. And he is like the apple of AL.com's eye once again, as they were so focused on Katie Britt for 2 weeks, and then they get some Tuberville comment on Katie Britt, and they won't let it go.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's just engineering controversies is what they do. It looked desperate to me when they brought that out. Like, okay, we all saw the CNN and comments. And here's the thing with Tuberville. You never know what he's going to say. And sometimes it's not very well thought out or whatever. But, like, they took something very marginal, I thought, and really, really overreached.
Yeah, it seems that way. And then now he's hitting back, so looking forward to hearing him on with you in that first hour.
Yeah, 9:35.
Also today you'll have former State Senator Dick Brubaker on. He is in that race for AL2, and looking forward to seeing his comments after you had Caroline Dobson, his opponent, on once again. One of the bills that you've written about, or your staff over at 1819 News, is something that's kind of gone under the radar, and that's the ABC board, and trying to get this bill passed that would allow ABC to own warehouses. And this is all after the talk of spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a new warehouse to fit all their booze in Montgomery. But they currently aren't legally allowed to own a warehouse. They have to lease. This is trying to change that.
Well, it's always been a rubbing point with the ABC board and the way they operate. Leasing spaces. Now, you know, whatever reason you think, well, it's good that they don't own a bunch of property, but what happens, guys? This is a way to launder money to your political cronies, potentially, right? That you're taking state money generated through alcohol sales or revenue or whatever, taxes, and you're leasing these spaces. Well, who owns these leases?
Exactly.
Like who's and that's always been the problem with privatizing the ABC whole apparatus. That there's somebody that's getting very, very wealthy. All these strip mall owners, and they own a bunch of them. And where the ABC board leases spaces, and then the same with these warehouses. They're leasing these spaces. And they've been doing it, and they sign these long-term, like multi-decade leases that go on forever and ever and ever. So it's a guaranteed income.
Mm-hmm.
If you're donating money to the right person, you're in good shape.
Yeah, and they're doing it right in front of our faces, too. They're not really hiding anything in any way. Hey, Jeff, before we go here, are you getting conflicting opinions on where gambling is right now, or is there kind of a solid opinion coming down from a number of people who've got to see the same thing?
I think it's dead this week. They'll get through this week, and then they'll take another week off for in a district work week. And then they come back. I'm not really hearing this, but having seen this play out before, I mean, it looks to me like this is done. I don't see this getting done. They're halfway through the session as of yesterday. The Senate and the House are going to volley this back and forth, and neither one wants to get caught with this hot potato. Hey, we passed a bill. It's that other chamber that didn't do its job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole rub. That's the whole sticking point. And I think they run out of time. But you heard Representative Brown the other day. He doesn't think the House is going to concur with the Senate bill.
Yeah. Wow. Feels like another gigantic waste of time once again.
Thanks a bunch, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
That's Jeff Poor, the Jeff Poor Show on the way in minutes. Hey, real quick, your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Guess Who, Sanger Theater, April 12th. Caller number 4 at 343-0106. Two tickets to see the Guess Who, Sanger Theater, April 12th. You can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com. We'll give away another couple pairs this week.